Great. Okay. Before we get started, I always like to talk about what we do. We're HMTRI, and we have a cooperative agreement with EPA, and we provide assistance specifically on brownfields, environmental workforce development, and job training. Try to help communities get their programs going and decide if it's something they want to get into at first, and then help them get their programs going. And it, once they get them going, we try to assist in what we can to keep their program sustainable. And we do a lot of that by interaction, peer-to-peer learning, annual meetings, these PLCs. We have documents and webinars. So we're basically here to try to help communities get their programs going and keep them going. We don't speak for EPA. We always like to tell that. We've been doing this since the beginning of the program, so we're fairly knowledgeable about workforce development, job training, and EPA. We're quite familiar with them, and we keep in close touch with EPA. But again, we're a third party, and that kind of works well because we can talk about the program. We could talk about what I call landmines, things that you might have to watch out for, and we could bring together a lot of experience from hundreds of grantees who have gone through this program, and some have succeeded and some have not. And so we're probably most familiar. We have more of a experience factor of an institutional memory, you might call it, of what seems to be working and what's not. As far as getting assistance, as I said, what we do is our opinion and also the opinions of our grantees, which we have on and like to get their experience. We'll try to give you the best answer we know about. Often we will submit questions to EPA headquarters when we're not sure of the answer, try to get an opinion from them. The way the federal grants are set up is, before the RFP, of course, you could talk about your individual program with your regional coordinator. After the RFP went out, you could still talk to your coordinator. And in fact, we suggest you get in touch with your regional coordinator that's in the RFP, but you really can only talk about RFP questions. So they can't really coach you on building your program or things you might have to watch out for or what you can do. But we do have an opportunity in these sessions that are informal, because we're not associated with EPA or the federal government, to talk and exchange ideas, which might help you. The next couple of sessions, and we have two more sessions, they're every other week on Wednesday, same time, same place. We'll be talking about what I call landmines, things you may want to consider when tuning up your program, things that you may not want to. One thing I'm going to ask is, if you're in a conference call situation, mute your phone, and please don't put us on hold. We like to keep lines open, but we certainly don't want music. These microphones now are so sensitive, we'll pick up the side conversations that are going on behind you. And you may say something we don't want you to hear, so just mute those. One thing about also, we're going to be talking today about questions you may have had on the webinars. We had two of them this last week, and they were excellent. And we'll be posting Glo will be talking about that in a second. But we want to talk about some unanswered questions or additional questions or questions that brought up questions. So think about that in the next couple minutes. We'll start off with that. And then after that, we'll talk about some other things regarding the things you should be doing now. Even in the webinars, you know, there's so many moving parts on these grants that even during the webinar, there were some questions, and we'll clear those up. No matter what anyone says, of course, you should be mindful. Always go back to the RFP, because that's probably the most official, the one official in the document you'll be graded on. So it's really important, when in doubt, always go to the RFP. It's been cleared and reviewed by many people, and what's in there is what's going to be the final judgment in terms of how these programs are evaluated. It looks like we don't know exactly how many grants will be submitted, maybe 50, 60, and 17 or so may be selected. Depends on, everything's kind of in flux. Some will be people who have had grants and they're re-upping. Some will be brand new. one of the things we're going to encourage, and no matter what your situation, if you're on this call and you're even just now starting, now we've been working on this for a year with a lot of you, if you're just starting and you think, oh, I'm in too late or this is too hard, and you get into this, I would say don't give up. And I'll end the call with the same piece of advice that I would submit no matter what, because one of the things that happens often on these grants is people will submit the first time. They may not make it, but then they'll talk to a regional coordinator and they'll get the experience of additional PLCs throughout the year, and they may go to our annual meeting and they'll develop a killer app over the year, a killer proposal over the year. It won't be long until the next round, which these are usually, RFPs usually go out in November. So the clock is ticking. So we'll be going through this cycle and starting a new cycle. So what I'm trying to say before we even begin is don't get discouraged and don't just not submit. I would submit no matter what. Even if you finish it and you really don't like the proposal you're submitting, submit it. And if you think it's not going to make it, that's okay. It's a foundation and it's a good start. So with those introductory words, we always talk about news from Washington. I know GLOW has a bunch of news. GLOW, I'm going to turn that over to you.
Okay. Actually, I do have a bunch of news. There was a posting to the Brownfields listserv this morning, which I also forwarded to our HMTRI listserv, about the webinars last week, and I'm just going to read this on here. EPA held two outreach webinars for prospective EWDJT applicants on January 10th and 12th. While both webinars covered the same content, questions received on both of the webinars varied. Due to technical difficulties, only the January 12th recording has been posted to the website. And Mike, all of these links you might want to include in your post-session notes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We'll be posting a bunch of addresses, which I'll talk about in a little later in this PLC.
Okay. The question and answer transcripts, though, that they've posted to their website, EPA, is a combination from both webinars. And they include corrections to questions that were asked or answered incorrectly or required supplemental information. In addition to the webinar recording, they have also posted the presentation slides to their website. So again, Mike will add that link to the post-session notes. Some other reminders that they wanted me to talk about. One of the corrections was the question on whether or not OSHA 10-hour construction can be delivered using grant funds. And it was answered in the webinar that the answer was no, it cannot. But actually, it can, as long as it is in concert and connection within the environmental training program. They wanted that part to be very, very clear. Because the course covers many topics that are necessary on an environmental job site, that's why it's an allowable cost. Other reminders that they wanted me to say was the importance of getting registered in SAM.gov and grants.gov early. They said, if an applicant has used these systems before, this step is still very important to them. They should ensure that their organization's SAM account is up to date, that their personal login information to grants.gov has not expired, and that they are designated as their organization's authorized organization representative within grants.gov. If you don't have all of this up to date, you will not be able to submit through grants.gov, and then you won't be considered for funding. Grants.gov has a help desk that's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you have a problem, you can call 1-800-518-4726 at any time. They also wanted me to let you know that grants.gov is actually going to be shut down for maintenance February 18th through the 21st. So you may want to keep that in mind. I know that these proposals are due on February 24th, but they will be shut down February 18th through 21. A couple of updates from HMTRI. I just wanted to let everybody know that the content for the Start a Program area on the Brownfields Toolbox website, we just recently rewrote everything and updated it. And just within the last couple of days, everything's been uploaded to the website at brownfields-toolbox.org. There are a few navigation and formatting issues that need to be resolved because this was done literally just within the last couple of days. But if you can ignore those, the new content is all there. So if you are in the process of writing a proposal, you might want to check that out.
Well, I'd like to remind everyone, if you're on a microphone that's open, put us on hold, please, because we're picking up some background noise and some conversations
in
the back.
Put it on mute.
Put it on mute. I'm sorry. Please put your phone on mute because we do not want to pick up conversations that may end up on WikiLeaks or something. So just put us on mute, please. Okay. I'm sorry, Glo. Go ahead.
Okay. As we've mentioned in the last couple PLC sessions, the date for this year's all grantee meeting has been confirmed for August 9th and 10th at the Crown Plaza Old Town Alexandria in Alexandria, Virginia. Right now we're waiting for an online reservation link from the hotel that I want to include in the invitation. So once we get that, I will post that invitation to the listserv and we can get started on the registration process. Last week, I was notified that there are a few openings still left in the two-week Train the Trainer Institute. This event is for trainers only. It takes place here in Davenport, Iowa, and it prepares trainers to deliver certifications for public and private responders and workers working in 40-hour HAZWOPER, 24-hour industrial emergency response, DOT HAZMAT, and hazard awareness and communication. So if you are a trainer you would like your trainer to attend, please complete and return the application that I posted to the listserv last week. If you do not have that application but you want one, just contact me through email, and that's ghanne@eicc.edu. Mike, I think that was all I had.
You know, Glo, you brought up something that's really important, and perhaps we need to talk to Rachel about if it's possible to extend this deadline, because the 18th through the 21st will be the time when everyone will be submitting their proposals. That's really concerning. So
that's the first time that I had heard that was going to be shut down, too. So
Glo, let's send a letter to Rachel and ask if it could be done. And we'll get back to everyone on the listserv. We've got to learn that early because we would really suggest that that's when everyone needs to, the 18th is when you need to be submitting your proposal because there may be issues in submitting. This happened in the past. We always hear the horror stories or someone submitted the last day and something went wrong or the internet went out or something and they couldn't get their proposal in. So that's a critical time. In fact, I would suggest that the 18th is about when you really need to be submitting your proposals, final proposals.
Send an email, and I'll let you know what they say.
Okay.
I would also like to know if it's down. Well, if you've started assembling your package, will it disappear and you have to start over?
Okay, I'll include that too.
Good point. What we wanted to do, and I'm going to go through some things, but does anyone have any, after listening to those webinars, are there some things that are lingering in your mind that really were kind of confusing as long as we're on this topic? Any?
Yes, I have a question. We have been very successful with our asbestos abatement and lead abatement trainings and placement for our program. We currently have grant. And in the actual RFP, it states that there's a limit on the amount that can be used for this. According to the frequently asked questions, it's saying it falls under the health and safety category, and it's on a maximum of $15,000. And I asked this question during the first webinar, and then they mentioned that that's the minimum and that it can also, there are different programs that are brownfield programs in the that are putting in money for this grant, and it could be used out of other pots. But it just wasn't clear on how much can be used for that particular type of training. So I don't want to put more money than what we can actually use. Is it the $15,000, or does it fall under the brownfield assessment and cleanup as well?
Okay, I'll give you our interpretation and what seems to have happened in the past. Up 2 years ago, before 2 years ago, this program has been so successful, other program offices like water, pesticide, have put money into the program because there's no other program like this in the agency. So they wanted to be a part of it. But the lion's share, you know, 2.8 or 2.6 out of the three is coming from us, Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, OBLR. So then the question came up, we're putting all this money into it, but say wastewater or pest management is getting all kinds of training, and it isn't right. And in terms of working with office management and budget, we have to show, or EPA needs to show, that these things fall into the brownfields solid waste emergency response heading. So they put this into the RFP to make it official that there will be some programs, if, for example, particularly the pest management and wastewater. Wastewater is the big one. Last year, for example, there was a big program that was a wastewater program. Well, wastewater put in some money, but not enough to fund all the wastewater programs. So the question is it fair for OBLR, which is Solid Waste Emergency Response, to be funding wastewater programs? That should be done out of wastewater. So they had to work with that. The same goes when you start talking about pest management. And so they came up with this approach, and it is very confusing. Actually, asbestos and lead are really good programs. In fact, it's an RRMP and the asbestos program are fairly vital. And the trick is to link them into your brownfield solid waste emergency response program. I don't think you're going to have any problem with asbestos and lead. Many, and if there's anyone on the call that would like to take exception to that, almost all of our programs in urban areas have asbestos and lead in them. And so they fund them. Now, to the extent you can leverage them with other monies, that's great. But I don't think I would continue. If you've got those programs, I think you'll be fine with them. Many of these programs are linked to brownfields solid waste emergency response. For example, Glow mentioned the fact that OSHA 10, because it's OSHA 10 and it is a construction course, but it has to do with construction health and safety. And you need respirators when you go on sites. You many of the mitigation techniques that they teach in that are used in solid waste emergency response. The same goes for forklift. The same also even goes for CDLs, commercial driver's license, when they're related to working with transporting hazardous materials. So the answer to that, in my opinion, unless they change it from last year, and they've informed us that this is going to be very similar to last year, is that RRMP and asbestos fit into those categories, very similar to forklift and commercial driver's license. I would try to relate it to, actually, asbestos is, and lead are hazardous materials that you're removing. So the link to hazardous waste is definitely there between asbestos as a hazardous waste and lead is a hazardous waste that you're removing from buildings. So that's the link that would work for you. So I think those are two great programs. RRMP was developed by EPA and asbestos started in EPA. So go for it. I think they're great programs. Does anyone have anything to add to what I just said?
Well, I have a related question. I thank the other caller for bringing that up because I'm still confused. It seems like if you look under Section 1C of the RFP, they list a bunch of training options, but it's not really completely clear which types of training fall under which category. So I'm still not sure whether those amounts that the other caller listed are important for determining which type of training you're going to go after. For example, asbestos and lead are mentioned in both quote-unquote enhanced EHS training and then also under brownfield hazardous waste training, but the other trainings, right, they're not put into specific categories. So is it up to, right, our professional judgment to determine which those fall under?
That's what they would probably say, and they would. This is the stock answer that is go by the RFP. Now, speaking offline and not per them, if you look at last year's grantees and what they did, and which was under the same exact circumstances, you can get a good idea of those. And you can go to some of the EPA sites. In fact, there's a document that EPA put out that I could put a referral to in the notes. It's all about EPA environmental waste grant programs, and they talk about their best programs, and they actually list their curriculum. Over the course of the year, we actually have the grantees talk about what they're teaching and what courses they're teaching. The impression I get from Rachel is the two problem areas are the pest management and wastewater. Because if they did not look at those, wastewater doesn't have a lot to do with brownfields, and it doesn't have a lot to do with solid waste, emergency response. Pest management is a great program. In fact, we had them talk at the annual grantee meeting, and anyone who goes through that curriculum can get a job and get started right away. But it's hard to relate that to solid waste and emergency response. So those two areas are problematic. And so in my opinion, I would not write a program curriculum that was a wastewater program, period, or we're going to teach pest management, and that's what we're going to teach. That could raise, that brings in the special situation. All of the others, there is pretty much a tie-in to solid waste and emergency response. As I just said, with the RRMP and asbestos and lead, even forklift and commercial driver's license, you can relate all of those to hauling away solid waste or hazardous waste. Did you have a specific curriculum you were talking about? And also, there is money for all of those. So it's not that they can't fund a lot of programs. They could in water, they can, in awareness programs, most likely, they could fund 40,000 of ancillary courses. These would be awareness courses. You might talk about wastewater, or you might talk about pest management as part of your overall curriculum. So they're just, I believe what they're trying to say is don't base your whole program on those two areas. On the others, try to relate it back to the extent you could relate it back, and some you don't even have to do that. They're obvious to solid waste and emergency response, and you'll be okay. Does that make any sense? Yeah, it does. Thank you. What are you thinking of? Is there a particular curriculum you're thinking of emphasizing?
Yeah, I was thinking about asbestos, lead, methamphetamines.
Okay. You're good on all those. Yeah. Okay. Meth labs are a big issue. And it's a hazardous material. It's tremendous. Meth labs, we've had programs that have focused on meth labs, and it's a real problem, both urban and rural. That's one program where rural areas have a real opportunity to work in, because they're here in North Carolina, go into the mountains, and it's a horrible problem. And RMP, as we just talked about, those are okay too. Anything else on this question? I think that the impression I get from EPA is this isn't as big a deal as it looks. As long as you just don't go out and we get three programs that want to do wastewater treatment. And I wish we could get a lot of money in wastewater treatment. Back in the 70s, when I worked at EPA, they were just starting, and they actually proved that you improve wastewater treatment, you improve the whole system. And there was huge amounts of money that went into wastewater training. And right now, all those guys are retiring, and there's a huge demand in some areas. If it's not patronage jobs or it's a locked-in job, some of the smaller communities, there's a tremendous amount of opportunities in wastewater. But the question that pops up is, well, wastewater ought to be throwing, you know, several hundred thousand dollars into this program to train these operators. But that's not what we're at right now. So, like I say, those two areas, I'd be just shy away a little bit. I would develop awareness courses in them so that your graduates have a chance. If there's an opening, they have all the other, all the health and safety courses, and they've got all the hazardous materials courses and the HAZWOPER, and they have, they're familiar and aware about wastewater treatment, or they're familiar and aware about pest management, and that's probably the way to treat it safely.
So with that being said, would it be wise, if you wanted to do wastewater, to just do two separate tracks, maybe one with wastewater for groups who want to go that way, and then the other with something that falls within the brownfield hazards assessment and cleanup? So it'd be two separate tracks, two separate funding?
Well, if it were me, I would stay away from the track. I would just do it as an awareness course and put your money into the others. This all depends on your community and your labor market assessment. We found
there's a need for both. So
there may be a need for both. We found that the common knowledge is, yeah, there's a lot of wastewater treatment jobs open, but here's the problem. Some communities, once they get into it, it's a patronage job, and they hire people. And to actually become certified in it, you have to work there for several years. So you can do an entry program. You can get someone entered. The one place I think it worked well is in Alaska, where they were creating new communities, and they had these small wastewater treatment plants, and there were these little plants all over the place, and there wasn't patronage, and they weren't bringing people in to train them to get certified, so they were able to move people in. But we found in some places, and I'm not sure if Chicago would be one, but a lot of urban areas, these are big operations. They bring people in and they train them and bring them up through the ranks. So you could end up trained doing a wastewater program, which they may not be able to fund, and then they can't get a job anyway when they actually go to apply. So I'd be careful. But as an awareness course, I think it's a great idea, so that they could apply for those jobs. But they wouldn't. You're not going to give them, to get certified, you actually have to have the experience linked with the training. So you won't be able to give them the experience anyway. So I'd be a little cautious. I like the idea of an awareness course more than a track. That's my opinion only. That's so.
I have a question. We have a lot of our brownfields in our region that are being converted to green space or green infrastructure. So it's directly connected to reusing the site, but I'm concerned that the green infrastructure installation is sometimes people think it's a water.
No, I understand what you're saying. No, I think you fit right into it. You're converting the brownfields into green fields, and people that will be evaluating are very familiar with that. So I would link it to that. Don't link it to wastewater treatment, but link it to when we start talking. And stormwater is kind of funny, but particularly if it's a project that's in a brownfields area that you're turning into a greenfield, that's right on the target area of this program is brownfields to greenfields. Yeah.
Well, that's what I thought, and I just didn't want it to get hung up in the, oh, that's a water program, we don't want to fund it.
Yeah, just be careful.
Okay.
Yeah, just don't treat it as a wastewater treatment, or you got to be a little careful on stormwater too. But there's a lot of that's links also, you know, in terms of green space. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
This is a tricky area, and I expect it's going to get worked out as we move on. This is about the second or third year that this has come up. And it's a valid question. I wish in the ideal world, particularly in wastewater, that they would just throw a lot of money at it like they used to, because we do need these occupations. It's just, again, it's a kind of smokestack funding. It's just that they're not putting money to train wastewater operators, and they'd like some training in it, but it's just not a full-blown, and they don't have the money. So right now, what we're doing is going to be good for the wastewater people, because we're going to make people aware. They're going to have all of this other environmental training, and they'll have wastewater awareness, and they'll be able to apply for these jobs. And think about it. You're going to have graduates just because they're coming out of your program doesn't mean they can't apply for wastewater jobs. So you want to give them in your curriculum an awareness. You want to give them some wastewater awareness. And when they go into these plants, they're going to be able to show all these credentials that they have and certifications that they've gotten, and they're related to wastewater. So it's going to be good for your graduates. So try to think in those terms. Two tracks are funny. When we did have a question about two tracks, how do you express two tracks in your grant proposal without going over the 15-page limit? And the response from Rachel was, those tables that are in the RFP are suggested tables, and you need to put your curriculum and how much you're going to spend on each curriculum, but you could change the tables. You could have two tables, or however you want to present it is up to you. You could expand the tables. So you could do the two tracks if you find that that's the way you want to present the program. So but you do have to keep to the 15 pages. That's important. One of the things that we'll be talking about and probably in the next PLC is how important it is to respond to every question, every question you have, because they go right to the RFP. I want to, and in the notes, I'm going to put a lot more things that we don't have time to talk about everything Glow talked about in terms of these sites. Certainly you could go to our site, the toolbox. You can go to the EPA sites, which are going to have all of this. Lots of information that was presented in the last week is all there, and you could download those. You could download a publication they did last year on different environmental workforce programs. So we'll put all of those in the notes, and you'll get those on Friday. I always like to talk about things to do now, and I want to do this as soon as possible because there are some things that take time. You could respond to everything in the grant proposal, but you're competing against 67, 60, 50, whatever the number is going to be that's going to submitting. So you've got to be, with one out of four being funded, you've got to beat out three other people. And the trick is, how do you do that? So if you just respond to everything that's in the RFP, are you going to beat three other people? And what we've been talking about in the PLC over the last year, how do you beat out the three other people? And a lot of this has to do not with answering the questions, but what do you do beyond answering the questions? And things that you've got to do now, and we always put these in the, maybe redundant for some of you, but we always put them in the notes. You've got to get your advisory boards going. Some of you may not have even thought about that yet. Get them on board before you start. Have you done public meetings? That takes time. If you can get into city council, in smaller towns it's even easier, just to get them, tell them you'd like to announce the fact that you're applying for an EPA Environmental Workforce Job Training program, and a little bit about the program, when the due dates are, perhaps how many apply, and that you'd like to, if you don't make it this year, you'd like to apply next year. On everything I'm going to say to do now, the response you might get is, I don't want to humiliate myself. What if I don't get the grant? I'm going up against three other people. I don't want to make all these promises and then have to go back to them, tell them I didn't get the grant. Always when you approach these people, say, we're planning on doing this. This is our first year. We may not get it, but if we don't get it, we're going to learn from it. We're going to reapply next year. Are you interested in being a part of this? Or could you support this? I can't say that we're going to get it. The odds are tough, but we want to get started somewhere. When you put it that way, almost everyone will say, yes, I'll help out, or let me know, keep me informed. And that's what you really want them to do, because right now what's going to propel your program or your grant proposal is you've engaged these people into your grant writing, which is going to be occurring in the next month. You want to talk about in your program how you've got your advisory committee and they're helping you write the grant proposal. You've had public meetings on this date to city council that you're planning on doing this. We've done this labor market assessment, but these are the employers we've talked to. These have committed to maybe hiring. These have committed to looking at, and looking is an easy one. If you do your labor, when we talk about labor market assessment, I'm not talking about going to Google and getting some numbers, which you could do in the last week of writing your proposal. I'm talking about actually talking to HR people and key people in organizations that say, well, we have a need for that. And the easy one is we'll look at your graduates because there's no commitment to look at. You might get really lucky, and these are the fortunate people. We have such a need that we'll hire 10 people, and we'll look at all of you graduates. Believe it or not, we've had situations with grantees who have gotten that commitment. And those people, you'd want to ask if they'll write you a letter with a commitment. That is really golden because, of course, keep your eye on the prize here, so placing our graduates, and you've got a commitment. Or you may have a conditional commitment, or you may have a we'll look at your graduates. So in that order, you want to be doing that. Now, that, you can't do that in a week. So you really need to get on that labor market. And the neat thing about labor market assessment, the way we want people to do it, is you're going to get your advisory board candidates, you're going to get your potential employers, and you may get commitments. So all of that is in one shot, but you've got to start looking at some manpower firms that may hire environmental people. You want to start looking at some of your industries. If you've got some consulting companies or cleanup companies, you want to start looking at those and trying to see if you can get someone who's at least going to look at your graduates, preferably hard, and may have an interest in being on your advisory board or maybe even being part of your program. You want them to bond with your program, maybe being a guest lecturer. You know, you want to say, would you, if you're really into it and you could spend some time with them and say, oh, I'd like to talk to your students. I'd like to see who you got. I'd like to talk about opportunities in environmental technology, that type of thing. So this all takes time, and I don't want to wait 3 weeks because it'll be too late. You've got to do that right now. Glo mentioned the internal things that you need someone else to be doing, setting up this grant.gov, doing the DUMS, the SAMs, the e-contact, and making sure you've got the person who's going to be authorizing that. That's, you've got to get someone assigned to that, and that's different than writing. That's the procedural part. You've got to do a lot of hard stuff here in terms of getting out of your office and getting these contacts made early. The sooner the better. Another thing you want to do now, if you can, is get your trainer on board. Go out for 3 bids. You may have the advantage of previous grantees. They've already got their trainer on board. But nothing says that you need to wait, and you shouldn't wait till after you've received or not received the grant to get your trainers on board. Do it now. Get some bids out there, 3 bids. You might be teaching different courses. It may change as you do your labor market, and it may change from your trainer. But think about this. If you do the 3 bids and you start choosing one, they can't write the grant for you. That's not possible. But what they could do is provide you information. You could ask them, okay, we're thinking of RMP and we're thinking of asbestos. We want to do a wastewater awareness. We want to do a little awareness on pesticides, some of these different courses. Could you give us a bid on this and do that to 2 or 3 and find out some way you could justify hiring 1, 2, or all 3 of them and put it in, document it so that you've got a trainer on board before you start. Now, that you may be able to even get that into your proposal. Depending on who the training is, it might be an organization that you can actually, some of those questions you have to answer in terms of experience, if you've got that person on board already, you can put that all into your grant. We've got this organization. They've been doing this for 15 years. They've got qualified staff. They've done this and that. And it's not a sub-grant, but it's a contractor. You're contracting with them. It could be a sub-grant. You might decide it's an organization, when we talked about that you're sub-granting to, or it might be a community college. And you can use their experience and credentials. So definitely now, early, as soon as possible, try to get your trainers on board, and it'll take a lot of burden off you in trying to figure out the costs of these different programs. And I'm running out of time, but last, I want to say also you want to assemble your team, This can't be done by one person, so you want to get as many people on it. And certainly you're going to have someone administrative doing the grants.gov stuff. You got them. But then you've got a team that, when you look at this RFP, who's going to do what? Who can do a really good labor market assessment? Who do we have here that really likes to get out and can spend the next week out on the road just talking to people? Who can do that? Get them committed and get timelines and assign them to a specific date when they're going to have that information ready. Assign them not only the task but the due dates. So get that started right now, right early. Now, after hearing everything I just said, if you said, forget it, we can't do all this in this time, submit early, but submit something. And what I'm trying to say is I want to set you up for next year. Over the next year, we're going to have PLCs every couple of weeks. We're going to have you're going to be invited as a member of the PLC. You're invited to our all grantee meeting. That's at no expense except getting there in Alexandria, where you can meet with all the other grantees, all the regional coordinators, all the EPA people. So, but if you don't set yourself up and submit now, you may find yourself next year at the same place that you're finding yourself now. So I would submit a piece of paper, even if it's a real not good. Submit it anyway, and then get into the process and go from there.
Mike, before we finish, I did get a response back from headquarters already on those questions about grants.gov. Rachel said that she actually did fight for that deadline extension up front and lost. So she said she's going to revisit the conversation again, but it was unlikely that the deadline will be extended. So you should probably plan your proposals around the February 24th deadline. And about the second question about what if you have some of your information uploaded into grants.gov before it gets shut down for maintenance on the 18th, that EPA doesn't know about. She said that you need to call the help desk at grants.gov and ask them. Again, their phone number is 800-518-4726. I asked if the help desk would be open during that maintenance time, and she said, yeah, they should be open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I would call that number and ask them before you start uploading anything, just to be sure.
So that's Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday of February.
Right.
So you really want to shoot for trying to get your proposal in the 16th or 17th with a backup you got a backup the next week. If you live dangerously, you could try the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. That's, you know, if you just can't get it, then that's the only alternative. That would be a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and hope everything's working good. Okay.
Got a quick question?
Mm-hmm.
If you do awareness, can you do like on your curriculum, you can do an awareness class? Can you also do like a separate certification class, like, you know, instead of having two tracks, just put it all in one and, like, do some awareness, but also do some certification with, like, two different career paths, but all in the same curriculum?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think it's Florida State. I want to say they give, like, 20 certifications of state and federal certs. So they give a lot of different certs, and you can do that. And there might be some beauty in that, say you give us different certs in different areas, and they can't fund one of them. You've still got some backup there, some of the other certs. I would go for it. And include state certs. Some have state certifications and some are federal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Thanks. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I have a question if you still have a moment.
Sure.
I'm from King County in Washington, and in the past our program has applied and received brownfields. But I've taken over the program, and we haven't applied for it recently, and just trying to get back in the game. I'm just, because I'm with the county government, so I'm just confused about doing an advisory board, and I actually need to take it up with my management team to see about forming that at a government level, because generally there's, you know, we're not a nonprofit, so it's a little bit different. But could my advisory board be like the trainers I've got set up and some other outside people? I mean, is that kind of what you're looking for as far as an advisory board?
Right. I'm not talking about, and these, and you don't want this kind of, that you do not want the governor and the head of Exxon, and you don't want those mm-hmm. people on your advisory board. We're talking about grunts. We're talking about people who are in the business. So you,
okay.
your advisor, you might be able to get some employers, some
okay.
equipment suppliers, some trainers.
Okay.
So you, actually, you want some community leaders. You want
okay.
you want the person, you want the lady that, that runs the church in the community
okay.
that you're targeting. That's the
okay.
one that knows everyone is
okay.
who you want on the advisory board. Now, being Kane County, and Kane used to be one of my favorite grantees. They're great. They had a great program for
We're
several
We're going to come
times.
Back. So.
Good. The one thing is on your trainer, sometimes the government organizations have some kind of restrictions on going out for bid. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That may be something you have to look at, unless you've got a community college that's you're tied into. So that would be something
yeah,
you may want to look at.
We kind of did an MOU, so.
Okay, so you're good,
so,
I think.
Yeah,
okay.
I think we're okay. Thank
good.
You.
Anything else? Well, in 2 weeks from now, we're going to continue this discussion. And some of the stuff I talked about is repetitive, but I want to jog memory, and some of it's new for some of you. And as I said, just start doing this stuff that takes a long time to do right now, because when it gets down to it, you get into that second week or even the third week, you could start putting together the grant, but you're not going to be able to do some of these other things. Okay, well, if you have any questions, you can email me, or if we'll continue this discussion in a couple of weeks. And between now and then, you all have good time. Email Glow or I with the questions, and we'll get you some answers.
To check out your SAM registration and your grants.gov registrations, make sure they're up to date.
Good. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Thank you.